you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh my goodness, I love this energy at the top.
I forgot to do an Instagram of your hands.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm making up for it, so I have to now.
Yes.
We'll reprogram you, but I miss you. I've missed you over the past 3 days.
Okay, well, thank you. We've talked a lot, though, let's be honest.
We had a late night phone call week, and it's been so nice to, like, we were like, oh, we connected, and we just had a really good time.
I love you, too.
I was saying things to you, and you were like, text me. That's good.
Let me just say this, and I'm not setting you up for a bunch of DMs, I hope.
Yeah.
But Darren, as far as advice is concerned, has just been through it all in a sense.
I guess,
some of the things she was like, you know, my dad has always said, da da da. And I was like, can you actually stop what you're doing and text me that? And she did. So,
yeah, you were like, I can't handle this.
And I know. Like, and it was like, it was just, it's just, you're amazing. So thank you for everything.
Testament to my parents. Yeah. But thank you.
Yes. You're welcome.
But speaking of texting, before we get into the case today,
mm-hmm.
I want to just say flat out, I don't know a case we're covering. Mm. I didn't read ahead because Matt, our bartender, texted, I believe both of us. Mm-hmm. He definitely texted me and he was like,
he told me, yeah.
He was like, so many twists and turns in this case. I don't want you to read ahead. I want this to be a surprise as it unfolds for you.
Well, for you, I think that was important because he did tell me some of the things. Matt's here in the room, by the way. Hi, Matt.
Oh my God. Don't face that champagne bottle to me.
How many people die when you're opening a champagne?
Yes.
Cork? Death by cork?
It was a lot, actually.
I'm opening one right now.
And it's facing me. I think we compared it to
Darren.
Dying with icicles.
I think it's 30 people a year.
Something
annually.
Like that. But how do they actually die?
Well, what if one hits you in the eye, in the eye socket?
And you die?
Fuck yeah, you die.
Does it go like right through your skull?
I don't have the heart to tell him like how the body anatomy works. I'm just going to let him.
Let him live.
24 people die annually. Thank you, Megan.
Megan just looked it up.
How many people?
24.
24, usually at
weddings.
That's
my number.
But I could feel like if you have a champagne bottle and you hit the cork to hit a chandelier and the chandelier falls on you, is that the chandelier killing you? Or
laughing, but it's not funny.
Is that...
Well, that's... I feel like I've worked at Oxygen long enough that I feel like if that's happening 24 times a year, I would have seen that on one of our headlines at this point. So I'm going to say let's source that, Megan. You know what I'm saying?
We're sourcing.
Yeah, here we go.
Here's
Matt's
the sound
going.
Of death right now. Darren's covering her face. Here it goes.
Ooh, that was good, actually.
Oh my God, thank God. Where did he point it?
Straight up.
Oh, thank God.
We survived. Yay.
Yeah, I mean, I love that sound, but like, I don't trust Matt at all.
Matt jumped back up, but I wanted to ask him what we are drinking this week because...
He's pouring something.
He's pouring some champagne, which I like champagne, but I don't know if I've ever had it in the middle of the afternoon on a Wednesday.
Well, buckle up, Missy.
That's because you're a loser, John.
This is my boss. This is my boss, everybody.
We're having a cocktail called Kiss of Death, which will hopefully make sense to you shortly.
Doesn't make sense yet to me. I'm dying at Matt's comment.
Off of a website called thedailymeal.com. I just have to shout them out because I'm taking the recipe.
Sure.
It is 1.5 ounces of gin, 1/2 ounce of creme de violette, 1/2 ounce of fresh lemon juice, two dashes of lavender bitters.
Need a dash.
Topped off with champagne or Prosecco. We're having Prosecco today.
Wonderful. And a tershburn of blood if it hits through your eye socket.
It's because you're a loser, John. Yeah, I'm like dying laughing.
We'll talk about that in our next one-on-one, I guess.
I will say, HR. I will say that I know like taste buds change every 7 years. And so
is
like
right?
as your allergies, that. Which is why that you can develop allergies over time. Like I love spicy food, but I never liked it 10 years ago. But the beer that I loved in college, and by loved, I mean just like tolerated because, you know, you're drinking like Natty Light or whatever. I hate Stella now. I hate Corona now. I hate Heineken now. Thank you so much,
Matt.
Like champagne and Prosecco. Thank you. Used to be. Is it leaking? Are we okay? It used to be like my drink of choice. I would drink. I would funnel it. That's how terrible I was. And now I can't handle that. Like it makes me so.
I can't take
lightheaded. Yeah. I mean, this will be fine because it's not that much. But just like I can't drink cups and cups of champagne like I used to.
Oh hell no, no. And I also get really bad headaches after champagne.
Yeah, me too.
Don't
sit, Matt. We have to change.
January 1st is always painful for me.
Oh, yeah.
Cheers, bitches.
Cheers, bitch. That's my sober month, though.
By the way, this drink is crystal clear. It looks kind of like water or Sprite or something.
Smell it. Let me smell it. It tastes so good. Taste it. It's wildly refreshing.
That's way better than I was expecting.
This is so good. Remember on another shot last week when that fan asked us what our summer drink of choice is?
Yes.
It could be this now.
Is it this one? The Kiss of
Death? I have to shout out Sarah Horowitz for this recipe.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
Delish.
Yeah, I think this is the summer go-to.
It's so
right
refreshing
here.
And it smells amazing. Mm-hmm. Should we get into the case?
Let's do that. This case, I do know it. By the way, we were talking a little bit about Darren not knowing. Matt, do you want to explain maybe why you didn't want Darren to know?
Did you want me to be surprised?
Because I think there's a lot of twists and turns, and I think...
Thunder is happening, sorry.
It's thundering outside. I think we've been doing this so long that Darren and you will often sort of know what's happening before it's...
Well, that's
before,
just because we're professionals, Matt.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
Sure.
But I think this one, I have to say, this is probably one of my favorite scripts of all time.
Wow.
High praise.
It's super good. And there's twists and turns, and I think you don't really know what's happening at the beginning. Everything's very confusing.
Mm-hmm. Is this better than Linford Crawford?
Well, I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Let's see where we are
but
by
I think
the
it's,
end.
Yeah. I think it's up there. I don't know if it's as funny as Linford Crawford.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not funny.
It's pretty crazy.
All right, we'll get into the details now, Darren.
Okay, let's do it.
So in the 80s, a woman named Patricia met a man named John Powell at Parents Without Partners in Cincinnati, Ohio. So they were both divorced and raising children, struggling, and fell right in love with each other, I guess, right from the start.
Well, you know, people do believe in love at first sight.
Yeah.
I've never really had that where it's like, I know attraction, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can feel something in the room and feel a vibe. I've never had that feeling of just like those people who say like I'm gonna marry you and then they do that. I have no idea what the fuck that's like.
I don't have that, but they're all of my major boyfriends in my life. I knew from the minute I met them that they would be a big part of my life.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say it's like love at first sight, but it's like
a connection.
Oh, we have a connection that is not gonna just dissolve, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for me though, I love the connections where I'm caught by surprise where I'm like, you're never going to be in my life. And then you find that they've been the best friends for you forever. It's
like
nice.
Like me, right? Yes. Thank
sure,
you.
John.
One of Patricia's children, Holly, said, quote, I was very young when I met him. I was 4. For me, it was important to have a father figure around. My situation before that didn't have one around. And so, you know, dad provided for our family. He was a stable force in the family. Patricia said, quote, but it was quite an adjustment for the kids, you know, my girls and his son. We did a lot of things together to try to, you know, keep that bond. End
it's,
quote.
It's a little Brady Bunch. Bringing families together,
like
you know?
Yeah. Holly also remembered, quote, one of my earliest memories of him is I believe he had a Harley when I met him, and that was pretty cool, end quote.
Have you ever been on a motorcycle?
Hell no. I could never do it.
I haven't in our either. It sounds like
two,
a death trap.
I've owned two motorcycles in the past.
And you've driven them.
Yeah.
Because like Matt would be the type of guy to be like, yeah, I own a Harley. And it's like, do you know how to drive it? He's like, I own it.
I own
you know,
it.
Like he would buy it just for the cachet of buying it.
Matt, we can't even get past the first 10 minutes of the show.
Would you let your kids drive on a motorcycle?
fuck no if I could prevent them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, now, my dad was like, no, but Carson's dad has a motorcycle. He's a big car guy, okay. And I want him to take me out.
Oh, okay.
Just for like a little trip.
Just a little, like around the playground or something.
Yeah, a little trip.
All right. So the two wed and planned their life together. Then one day, John got in a motorcycle accident.
Oh,
just as we expected.
So never mind.
Patricia went to the hospital, and John was nearly unrecognizable. He'd suffered brain damage as well as damage to his lungs and an eye. He was also in a coma.
Oh, shit.
Holly said, quote, I know that he had a terrible road rash from the asphalt. The fact that he was even still with us was remarkable, end quote. A nurse's aide told them that John might be able to hear them, and so the family spoke to him and encouraged him.
Yeah.
To their great excitement, he awoke after 4 months, but had a trach and couldn't speak, so it was only nodding his head and blinking.
Can you imagine?
Ugh, no.
Like, not only coming out of the coma, feeling like you probably just went to sleep. I don't know. I'm just, that's
who
like
knows?
Conjecture.
Yeah.
But being the family waiting after 4 months and then all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah.
I find comas so fascinating.
I do. I think they are fascinating. It's true. Holly said, quote, there aren't a lot of success stories at those kind of places. They quickly deemed dad their miracle patient.
Oh, wow.
End quote. Once John was in therapy, he began to come back. He would wheel himself down the hallway, had a sharp mind, and soon would be able to walk, talk, and eat. Holly said, quote, one time, Mom and I had visited him. His eye contact was very sporadic. We kept guessing through things, like, are you hungry, thirsty, do you want your hair brushed? He was very agitated. He couldn't satisfy his concerns, but we felt like he was trying to tell us something, and we said, we're so sorry, we can't understand. We ended up leaving, telling him we love him, and we'd see him tomorrow, end quote. That is like a nightmare scenario for me, like,
yeah.
Being able to, like, see and hear, but not really communicate.
Yeah. Ugh. Did I ever teach you that, like, what it's like to feel like you're paralyzed when you put your fist down on the table like that
this.
And you put out your ring finger.
Oh wait, so I'm going to try it right now.
You put your fist like flat on the table.
Okay,
fist. And then you just put your ring finger out.
Okay.
Try and lift your finger off the table.
Oh my God, don't. I just got
And that's what
panicky.
It's like to be paralyzed. Like ugh. Knowing in your mind that you're like telling it to move it
yeah.
And you can't. But also when you said like his eyes are really sporadic, That
means something.
That
else.
Means like kind of remind me of like the Elisa Lam sporadic elevator video of just like something's going on.
You know,
something is definitely going on, and I think he wants to communicate something desperately
with his eyes. Clearly,
so remember this.
Yes,
I want to mention the Elisa Lam thing because I feel like every once in a while people ask you like the one that like really
I always
messed
say that
with
one.
You, and you're like, do you remember the Elisa Lam video?
But everyone knows
no, it's
it.
True. I know. Yeah.
And they kind of forget about it. And also, like, there's so many water towers in New York City, like, literally
yeah.
Behind your head right
there
now is a water
is
tower.
One.
And I think about it constantly. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, shit.
That's kind of creepy knowing that we recorded that episode and there was a water tower right there.
I know.
I never really noticed it because the window is behind me. Anyway.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't actually see him tomorrow because Patricia got a call the next day at 8 a.m. that John had passed away.
Oh, my God.
So adding to all of this.
That's killing me.
Yeah. Holly said, quote, and so I think we all hugged and cried and tried to process what we couldn't understand. You know, I had just been there with him the night before.
Of course.
Quote. And it sounded like she said, like, everything was, like, kind of looking up in a sense. So,
I mean, he woke up and, like, he was the miracle dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, obviously, Patricia was just utterly heartbroken. And when the autopsy was performed on John, the coroner took note of a strange smell, and it turned out to be cyanide.
Oh, okay.
The examiner said, quote, cyanide in the body, it's unusual. Wasn't anything that in the hospital that might have caused him to have a cyanide level in his body, so we alerted the police.
Right, cyanide's not like a medicine that they would be giving him.
No.
It's a poison, basically.
Right, exactly. The police learned that John was being fed through a tube directly into his stomach, so they asked the hospital check if there were any other incidents in the hospital in case it was a problem in the food supply.
Well, that's a good point, yes.
Which happens. But no one else had any problems. He was clearly targeted. But by who and why? Patricia remembered finding all this out quite clearly. She said, quote, I was cooking dinner. Two detectives came up to the door. They said they wanted to go over John's medical records and they'd like me to come with them. So I had to tell the kids that I'd be back and took the ride down there. And I didn't even realize it was the homicide department. Then they're giving me the Miranda rights without me realizing that. And then all of a sudden, they said he was poisoned. I was in shock. I was really in shock. Then I realized that they were interviewing me. They were going to see if I killed John.
Oh my
end
God.
Quote. Well, to be fair, police doing their due diligence. Mm-hmm. You'd think it'd be someone he knows because he's targeted, and she was just there.
Right, exactly. And by the way, Megan, if you could isolate Darren's audio where she says, "I killed John," I would just like to have that as a ringtone or something.
Yeah, I killed John.
Yeah, I killed John.
Although, just the vision of two detectives coming up to the door. I don't want to ever see two detectives walking up to my door.
Never
want to
see police at my door.
Let me tell you this. Last summer, I don't know if I ever talked about this, so I'll save it, but let's just say I had detectives in my apartment.
No, you did. You remember you said about the shooting.
Did I say the whole thing?
You didn't. You only said that there was
an
a
incident.
Shooting, but you didn't say what it was about.
Got it. Okay. Well, I'll save that for another time, but I will say this. There were detectives in my apartment all weekend long, like 10 different people, and it was jarring. To like just kind of always be seeing these foreign people in big suits, like trying to figure out a crime in your apartment. It was really disturbing. I know. I had kept it kind of quiet because at that time they didn't know what was happening, and I didn't want to be like,
did you rat on me? Did you rat on me?
And it turns out it was Darren Karp. Can you believe it?
Such a dick.
All right, let's get back to this.
Well, police thought that perhaps it was a mercy killing, or what we usually think is for insurance money.
Insurance.
A detective said, quote, "She was a little angry that we were even thinking about her, but she did take a polygraph, and we just felt that she was no part of causing the death, so we ruled her out."
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, like, let's say we think that she's guilty. Her being pissed off, I think that we could say to ourselves, like, of course she's pissed off. She doesn't want to be caught.
Yeah.
But if you're completely innocent, I'd be like, why are you focused on me? Go find out who killed my fucking husband.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Next, detectives turned to the other 35 people that had access to John and interviewed all of them in just a couple days. One nurse raised some eyebrows for her belief in euthanasia. But then another man named Donald Harvey seemed much more interesting. Donald previously worked at a VA hospital, and a security guard told investigators that, quote, "Donald Harvey used to work here, and we let him go because he's stealing body parts out of our morgue and using them for satanic rituals."
So sometimes people let go because they're late to work, or maybe they were insubordinate.
Nope,
he was stealing body parts.
Yep, for satanic rituals.
They were already dead. And, you know, there's nothing illegal about having rituals.
Matt, please.
You know,
is something illegal about stealing, Matt.
Megan, turn his mic off.
I guess.
I mean,
this is
now
ridiculous.
We know it's Donald Harvey is mad.
Right.
The detective said, quote, "Another nurse made the comment that Harvey, who had bathed the patients, fed them, cleaned them up after them, and he told her he had been through a death investigation before. And we just said, well, let's make sure. We got him in for a polygraph and interviews as soon as we could, basically."
Yeah, well, that's good.
Detectives brought him in for a thorough interview. They interrogated him about John, and Donald Harvey said he felt sorry for him. After 3 hours, Donald wasn't crying, wasn't upset or angry, and then seemingly out of nowhere, he said, quote, "I gave him enough cyanide to kill a horse."
Oh, my God.
Interesting.
Imagine being like, no, I don't know what happened. By the way, I gave him enough cyanide to kill a horse.
Right.
Like, what kind of a person does that?
So they asked him, quote, "Donald, did you ever do this before?" End quote. And he said, quote, "Well, Jim, I don't know. Sometimes I think I'm two people." End quote.
That was a good read of that line, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Not wanting to give him a setup for his insanity plea, investigators stopped the interrogation right there and took the confession, charging him with first-degree murder.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you just heard, including all of the first-hand quotes, came from the Oxygen show License to Kill.
So, by the way, tune in because this show is wild. Like, this isn't even the wildest thing that's happened on the show.
It's wild.
So a reporter at a local news station thought there was something suspicious about the story police told. The reporter named Pat Menarkin told License to Kill, quote, "Well, I asked, had the police given any thought to whether there had been other killings? And they say that they don't think there were, that they'd asked him that this was a mercy killing. This was a one-off kind of thing. And here are some of the things that didn't hang together right. First of all, this was a 36-year-old orderly who had spent his whole career caring for people, and suddenly he kills one? Something's not right, and I had a lot of questions."
Well, I mean, that's a perfectly fair question. You know, like, A, how did he kind of have access to the cyanide? And B, why this guy?
And thank God a journalist thought about this, by the way.
Yeah, because, like, hello, the police aren't. But, like,
yeah, right.
That does seem a little weird. You know, why him, too?
Well, we do need to, the police should be given more credit than than they are receiving. But we'll get there.
The story is unfolding as we're reading it, Matt.
I know.
Well, Pat felt that it wasn't possible this could have been the first person that Harvey had killed.
I would imagine.
I would agree, right? Like, yeah. If you know how to put cyanide into somebody, then this probably isn't the first time you've been doing it.
Yeah, or at least you tested it out on animals or something.
So he went on air on Channel 9 and presented a news report on the shocking story of the Mercy killing at the local hospital. By the way, shout out to the free press. You know what I'm saying?
Gotta love it.
Afterwards, Pat said, quote, the next day the phone rings and she said, I can't tell you my name, but I work at Drake Hospital. I'm calling about the John Powell story, the orderly who we believed killed the patient at Drake. It's not the first one. We think there are others. I said, who's we? Oh, I work at Drake. What do you do? She said, I'd rather not say, but you need to dig. Do your job. And I said, but I'm trying to do my job and I need you. And after several back and forths, I said, look, here's my unlisted home phone number. Think about it and call me, and I promise you I will do whatever I can to get to the bottom of it. I remember thinking, it's about to explode, end quote. So
interesting.
He brings it up on the news.
Yes.
And then people in the hospital are like, oh no, this isn't a quiet little secret.
Right.
We
this
have
is
hunches.
A theory. But yeah. Then
that
you
was
know
a nice dramatic reading, John.
Oh, thank episode. You.
But if you're gonna call in, like help the person out, be as anonymous as possible,
well,
but
true.
Do the digging too, you know?
Well, around 5 PM that day his phone rang and it's the woman at the hospital again, but this time she had several of her coworkers on the line.
Oh my God.
They thought there might be as many as 9 or 10 victims and tried to get as much information from the callers as possible, but suddenly they decided they wouldn't talk anymore and told him, you're on your own. So that's a little bit weird.
Granted, I don't know how the case is going to unfold, but like, that's pretty fucked up. And if the fact that you're like, imagine that like water cooler conversation, not about like what happened on The Bachelor, but like, did you hear that
how
Donald's killing people?
Yeah.
Right. Like you'd think that someone would report this.
Well, you would hope, but maybe they were like, you know, we'll get into those details. The journalists begged to meet them and they reluctantly agreed to meet at a home. When Pat arrived, there were 8 nurses sitting around a dining table ready to talk.
Oh my God.
According to Pat, they all said the same thing. We've been trying to tell the head nurse on the ward for 7 months, 8 months that too many people are dying. Donald is always there. Donald seems to know in many cases beforehand that someone is going to die. We're not statistical experts, but what are the odds of that? End quote. And I also wonder, too, you know, about this stuff, especially having seen some of License to Kill, is there no oversight with like hospitals? Like if there's an inordinate amount of people randomly dying, does that trigger any red flags to some sort of oversight group that knows to like maybe look into these things?
I would think. You know, obviously people die all the time in hospitals.
At hospitals, yeah.
But for no apparent reason and randomly seems...
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, they had assembled a list of people they suspected he had killed. It was now 13 names.
Jeez.
Pat said, quote, what they told me was that the head nurse on the ward treated Harvey like he was a favorite. He ingratiated himself with her. He was always available for extra shifts. The nurses, they'd been threatened repeatedly with their jobs. The head nurse had made it clear that if they didn't stop talking about Donald, that she was going to see them fired and see their licenses revoked, end quote.
I'll take care of you, John.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
And you, Karen.
Well, that...
that's okay.
I'm set.
I'm good.
I take my chances.
Just trying to pick up an extra shift.
I got it. Well, so clearly there's a coupledom happening in some sort of way, but Pat built an army of sources within the hospital to investigate the possible serial killer because this guy's a fucking beast and amazing.
Right.
One source, a quadriplegic man, offered to supply documents. Pat told License to Kill about that interesting day, saying, quote, he had a document pickup ready and that I should meet him at a supermarket that was just a few blocks from the hospital. I have to do everything I can to disguise my appearance. I put on the ugliest glasses I had. So he went into Matt's closet. I put on the ugliest glasses I had and I'm skulking into the grocery store and sure enough there he is, quadriplegic in a wheelchair, and he says, quote, I'm sitting on it, reach under me. And I say, you want me to like lift you up? He's like, I'm a quadriplegic man, come on. And I said, but I don't want to get into your personal space there.
Yeah,
you know. And he said, it's the only way to get him, reach in there and get it. So I lift his legs up, lift him up, and pull this envelope, big manila envelope full of documents, out from under him, which was, listen, like I understand, like you don't want to invade his personal space, but at the same time,
he's telling you to do it.
There's probably no other way.
Mm-hmm.
Pat began to match Harvey's work schedule to the various suspected victims' death times, and they were all lining up.
Oh, right. So they were saying, like, you know, the these people were dying at this time, and look who's on the clock.
Harvey was on the clock.
Yeah, exactly. That's very interesting.
Well, he asked the police for help as well, but they were just mum, just mm-hmm. silent. A detective told Pat that they were not investigating other deaths. The detective later explained to License to Kill, quote, "I lied to him because we didn't know if there were some other people involved in this. We didn't know if Harvey was acting alone or there could be other nurses, right. But the investigation was still going on, still interviewing. Then we're doing a lot of background on Donald Harvey and trying to find his many other victims." So there's a reason for them being a little cheeky about this whole thing.
Right.
So Pat continued his investigative journalism while the police worked on a covert investigation of their own. After 2.5 months of intense investigative work, Pat has a 30-minute special to run on the air.
Right, because remember, he has access to the local TV station.
He's a journalist.
Yep.
Channel 9 invited the county commissioners, DA, and a number of authorities to a viewing area. Pat said, quote, "I wasn't coming in with a verdict. I was coming in with questions. That's a journalist's job. Our mm-hmm. investigation reveals that staff members at Drake begin raising questions of their own about Harvey and what they believed were unusual deaths at least 7 months before his arrest,
wow.
but that their concerns apparently were ignored. Within the year and 1 week between Harvey's arrival on the ward and his arrest, 29 people died there.
Wow.
Can you imagine the hospital? They must have just been, like, shitting themselves.
I would never go to that fucking hospital ever again.
But also, like, this journalist has the times when people died.
Right.
And where Harvey, you know, probably his shift, that they were under his care and that he had cared for them. Like, how is this journalist getting all this information? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
They must have been like, oh, fuck. And yeah. also... they didn't figure out anything in this fucking journalist.
I know,
too.
Right, right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, all these things are lining up.
But isn't this so funny? Because, like, this is what we're hearing a lot in the news. We won't get into anything specific, but... you know, in the last couple of years, it's all been journalists at, like, the New York Times and the Washington Post that are uncovering, like, a lot of major crimes that are going on right now.
I mean, Ronan Farrow really broke
exactly.
the Harvey. I mean, fuck, the comedian Hannibal Buress broke the Bill Cosby thing.
That's right. Yeah.
So everything's possible.
Everything's possible, guys.
Well, this is kind of a sick fact. Apparently, yeah. Donald almost always found the deceased and even joked about that fact. According to the New York Times, his colleagues dubbed Mr. Harvey the Kiss of Death.
Much like
what are we drinking?
The Kiss of Death.
And I love it, too. I'm like, so good.
Delicious.
Give me another.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so many patients seem to be dying in his care, even for a ward dominated by the terminally ill. The DA's office was very interested. So was Harvey's defense attorney. He sat Harvey down and told him, quote, "As I see things, my mission is to try to keep you alive because they're going to want to put you in the electric chair. I've told them that we will tell them everything in exchange for life in prison," end quote.
Okay.
All sides agreed to the plea deal, life in jail and no death penalty if he confessed to everything. The prosecutor told the New York Times that giving up the death penalty was a necessary move in order to get him to confess. Without a confession, the case would fall apart, as most of his victims had been embalmed and buried and would probably no longer show signs of poison.
Yeah.
Also, no one ever actually saw him commit his crimes, and the full confession just seemed absolutely crucial.
Yeah, I mean, when you don't have any of those other details, you're going to need a confession.
Yeah.
So an investigator remembered, quote, "We started at like 7:30 in the morning and he went and confessed to all these murders and we ended up maybe 9 o'clock at night. It was unbelievable."
Wow.
End quote. The hospital records revealed that 50 or 60 people had died while he was working there. So law enforcement went through every single one with him.
Wow.
Let's hear an audio clip of Harvey describing what it was like to poison the patients.
A shallow breathing and they get real ashy looking and just... done. I was surprised that the rat poison had worked so fast. And that he turned blue within 5 or 10 minutes. He was already gone.
So wow. disturbing. I don't know that I ever wanted to know those details
no,
in my life.
Me neither.
But here we are.
And just like shallow breathing and then get ashy looking. God.
It's so sick. And the detail of his memory astonished everyone. Let's listen to his response to an investigator asking him about the location of James Woods.
Do you remember the location of James Wood, what unit he was in?
B-100, room 103, bed 3. Yes. Watson was in room 7, bed 4, bed 2, room 1. He was a little short black guy, 101, bed 4,
please. And with no remorse that you could... I don't think he was sorry about any of it.
I'm astonished at his memory.
I know.
Like,
well, during the confession, Harvey showed no remorse. He killed with a small amount of cyanide in the gastric tube. A doctor explained to License to Kill how cyanide works, saying, quote, when someone is given cyanide, the poison quickly enters the bloodstream and prevents the body from producing ATP, a form of energy needed for muscle function. Without ATP, major muscles like the heart and lungs shut down, causing cardiac failure and respiratory arrest. Death usually occurs within 5 minutes, which can feel like a lifetime for the conscious victim.
Yeah, of course. End quote.
I will say this. I mean, I see Megan, you're kind of like rubbing your hands because you just can't.
Terrifying,
really.
Yeah.
It's such an unsettling description that, like, it's, I'm probably not going to sleep well.
Also,
honestly.
Also, I think the thing that bothers me the most is sort of how easy it is to kill someone.
I was just thinking,
you know,
that
what
too.
I mean? Like,
and it's done in 5 minutes.
It's done in 5 minutes, yeah. And like a life can end so
instantly.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the New York Times reported, quote, after his arrest in 1987, his mother Goldie McKinley said, quote, he's still a good boy. He's just terribly sick and he needs a good doctor. End quote.
That makes me, like, my heart break for her.
I know,
you know what
does.
I mean? Because as a mother, mm-hmm. you have to think that, I think, just to have a little bit of hope.
Well, she's probably seen the good parts of him and can't imagine that he would do this.
Right. Clearly, there wasn't every, you know, not every inch of him was horrible,
right.
Despite being a murderer. It sounds like he's...
He's still a good boy.
Yeah.
He's still a good boy.
That almost, like, scared me
he's
in my
still
ear.
Still
I was
a
like,
good boy.
It's like I was in a trance.
Especially with the modulator on his voice.
Donald
yeah,
Harvey,
right, exactly.
Good boy.
But he's obviously terribly sick.
Yes, definitely. Pat said, quote, Harvey said the patients, they often knew what was happening to them. He'd tell them. He told John Powell as he was killing him that he was doing it, and Powell had no place to hide.
That's why his fucking and eyes were darting everywhere. He's like, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah, of course.
That's terrible. But in his confession, authorities learned that it wasn't just inside the hospital that Harvey was committing these atrocities.
Okay.
I just have to say this. This is going to be one of the best/most disturbing quotes ever read on this podcast.
Uh-oh, Darren, you
Darren,
have it.
You gotta do it justice.
No pressure.
An investigator said... The magnitude of it was so disturbing. He was gay and his boyfriend ran a hair salon and they would have dinner parties and Harvey was jealous of like the girls that worked in the salon and he'd poison them.
Oh,
okay. He didn't kill them, but he had different types of things. I think he had an HIV virus he dumped on a salad.
What?
He had lovers outside of his relationship that he killed. He was using arsenic on his boyfriend. So Harvey would give him a little bit of arsenic and Carl would get sick. They couldn't figure out what the hell was going on with him. Carl's lucky he's not dead. He was just an evil guy. He was just killing everything. End quote. Talk about like a fucking jealous lover.
Well,
he's still a good boy.
Listen.
Yeah, he's still a good boy.
If there's anything I'm taking away from that quote is that I now have plenty of reason to not eat salad. And
I know an HIV, like, hey, can I get avocado and just like a touch of HIV?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, that is so unbelievably disturbing to me that like, how will I ever go to dinner and order food from a restaurant again?
What does an HIV virus taste like?
I don't know. Let's never hopefully find out.
Just things I want to know.
Upsetting, yeah.
Harvey kept a list of his victims hidden behind a picture frame in his apartment. It had 27 names. The Times reported that his list showed he sometimes killed 2 times in a day.
It's kind of weird to think that there's a list. I was just kind of visualizing a list behind a picture frame and like who finds that.
It's like very Dextery.
Yes, exactly.
This good boy here is clearly sick. He even told prosecutors that he killed 1 patient with adhesive cleaner in a drink. He had used all his cyanide earlier that day when he was murdering John Powell, according to the New York Times. So he had to be thrifty. Channel 9 Cincinnati reported that, quote, Harvey admitted to killing 24 people at Drake Memorial Hospital while working as an orderly, and he was ultimately convicted of 36 murders between 1970 and 1987.
Man,
end
the
quote.
70s were just not a good time.
No, they were not. I would not want to live in New York in the
70s. No.
He was given 3 life sentences. The New York Times piece published at the time of his conviction in 1987 wrote, quote, Mr. Harvey laughed quietly at times in the proceedings as Arthur Ney Jr., the county prosecutor, stood before a 4-foot by 8-foot board listing the names of the victims. The list began with Helen Metzger, an elderly woman who had lived upstairs for Mr. Harvey. She died April 10th, 1983, after eating a pie he made her that was laced with arsenic.
Oh my God.
His total body count varies a bit. The New York Times reported that, quote, Mr. Harvey, among the most prolific mass murderers in the United States history, confessed to killing 37 people, which is kind of shocking because a lot of people don't know anything about Donald Harvey.
I certainly didn't.
Right. It's important that, like, so many names.
Well, like, even like Charles Manson, who didn't actually commit a murder, but led people to do it, you know, not that there's like any insignificance to the to those.
No, but
murders,
it wasn't 37
but it
people.
It wasn't 37 people right. in such unbelievable, conniving ways.
Well, get this. Channel 9 Cincinnati reported that, quote, in total, he claimed he killed more than 80 people.
Oh, my God.
And because of the way he was doing it, you know, I don't want to say the perfect crime, but it's almost yeah. like eventually those bodies aren't going to be able to have that poison in them anymore.
Right.
Pat interviewed him again in jail after his confession. And I'm going to read you a clip actually from License to Kill of Pat describing yeah. something from the interview. So okay. this is a quote. And I said, you know, did it ever occur to you that someday you'd get caught? And he said, oh, yeah, but I never thought it would be a journalist who'd do it. I was always thought it would be the guys who drive the cars with the blue lights on top.
Also known as cops.
Police. I'd get pulled over one day and they'd say, it's time. Come with us. Never thought it would be somebody like you. So when it all came down on you, what did you think when you were sitting in jail? He said, well, I had plans for getting even. I was going to kill you. Oh, I was going to take you out in the desert and tie you down like the Indians used to do and pour honey all over you and watch the ants eat you very slowly and laugh and laugh. End quote.
And my thought...
He's still a good boy.
And my thoughts...
Hashtag good boy.
My thoughts immediately went to Matt's story where he was in the middle of Turkey being eaten alive by ants and woke up in like a
but
desert.
But Matt did that to himself. That's and true. That's a different thing.
That's a whole different story.
Matt's not a good boy. He's a dum-dum.
Hashtag good boy.
Is our new thing.
Still a good boy.
Hashtag still a good boy.
Hashtag
is a new thing.
Still a good boy.
I do want to
say something though about what he's saying here, because it's like, okay, you can kill people by helpless, you know, because they're helpless and can put cyanide in their feeding tubes. Would he really have been able to like take this guy out to the desert and do all these things? Who really knows?
Seems that like a fantasy a killing.
Point. Yeah,
that
and it's
is
also
a very good point.
And it's
killing 88-year-old
exactly.
neighbors that have no connection to him. That's fucking
by baking
easy,
them pies. Right?
Right. I mean, like, how is that going to be traced back to
exactly?
You?
But it also shows his like weird psychosis, like that he's trying to assert his sort of serial killer dominance. Sit down now.
Thanks, hashtag
guys.
Still a good boy. Donald Harvey's God. Plea deal included a clause that if investigators ever linked another victim to him, they could seek the death penalty. And he continued to add more names to his list.
Wow.
Channel 9 Cincinnati reported that in 2011, Harvey began selling items on websites as murderabilia.
Which I'm upset that he did this because I feel like if we had memorabilia on our show,
we'd
would
call
it
that.
You know what I mean?
It's annoying.
But yeah. You know, he's unfortunately for him, just not so popular because who knows that
oh thank
name.
God
yeah which is great
that's true
I mean,
yeah
like,
he's not an influencer thank right. God
no, he's not no. a true crime influencer.
Harvey told CBS News quote, I hope I never get real sick because if I ever have to have surgery I don't think I'd ever come back out. That's the way I feel because I think someone will help me along. End
well
quote.
Listen, not everyone's doing what you're doing, Harvey, so why don't you just, you know, just well, don't even worry about it.
I just love that, like, he just doesn't want to get sick. Like, yeah. That's the biggest worry. You have three life sentences. You've killed 80 people, but okay. Mm-hmm. Well, not quite illness, but in 2017, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. after 30 years in jail, an inmate named Elliot attacked Harvey in a cell, and Harvey died from injuries 2 days later. Mm. Channel 9 Cincinnati wrote that, quote, months later, Elliot sent letters to the Blade newspaper in Toledo saying that he punched and stomped Harvey in a cell. He said he grew up in Kentucky near some relatives of Harvey's victims, the newspaper reported, end quote.
Interesting.
You know, they always say that the worst victims in prison are those pedophiles because, like, yeah. everyone can argue that, like, doing something against children's terrible.
I mean, even, like, some brutal murderers are like, oh, no, you're not going to mess with children. And they
take their revenge out in prison, and it's still a race, you know, it's a wild race in prison in and of itself. So I'm almost not surprised that this happened to him.
By the way, I want to mention, does anybody else never want to go to the hospital again in your entire lives after hearing
right.
this story?
That's like terrifying.
I know. It's
and
sad.
Like he obviously got through all the background checks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a great point. I hadn't even thought about that. Take a drink.
Well, yeah. Tell us what you guys think of the story using hashtag martinis and murder, hashtag still a good boy. And please DM us at JThrasher, at Carpe Darren, and at Matt_the_bartender because mm-hmm. we're never going to fucking sleep again.
I'm not. I mean, how do I? I will never. I was just going to say, as we finish our drink, I will never be able to eat a salad again. And I will never be able to, by the way, I already have what's called white coat syndrome, where when you walk into a doctor's office, your heart starts beating and I have to like calm myself down before they start taking my
my brother has a fear of blood. Yeah,
it's like blood and just like the seriousness of it. Ooh. And the fluorescent lights. I just have
They're all
things.
Good boys and girls.
Oh, okay, all right.
Still a good boy.
I wish Matt never said that.
Me neither.
Ever again.
Let's transition to some, let's end on a happy note.
Yes, Regan on Facebook says, I'm thinking it's Regan, R-E-G-A-N. She says, I've been loving the Detective's Den. Such an amazing idea and such great content.
Oh.
For those who don't know, Detective's Den is our Oxygen like loyalty type of club. You can sign up and you get exclusive membership perks. This week, we sent out our Charles Manson Detective's Den. And in it, Darren, is our exclusive interview with Buddy Day. So Martinis and Murder fans.
Gotta get this.
You need to get it. We mentioned it on another shot. But we'll have a sign up link in our show notes. And if you want to go to oxygen.com/detectivesden, we have some other things up our sleeves. You're not going to want to miss it.
Don't miss it. Amanda on Facebook says, quote, trying to catch up listening to 119 and just listen to John say 1990. I'm at work in a quiet government building. Just literally fell backwards out of my chair laughing hysterically. Best Tuesday ever. John, give the fans what they want.
1990. But here's the thing, you know, it's funny because
you're a loser, John.
Right, yes. It's just funny because I'll just say this quickly that, you know, in life, you hope that your legacy is that you've helped people or maybe you've made someone's day along the way. I really feel, based on my direct messages from Twitter and Instagram,
it's too funny. Like
that it's this moment on the show.
Know, it was too funny.
It's a cultural moment.
Seriously,
America.
Has.
People all over the country are just randomly to each other saying,
1990.
That's true. They probably are.
It is the most emphatic year.
That's right. Exactly.
Oh, guys. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm happy I didn't read this case beforehand. All these twists and turns. I'm literally never going to a hospital again.
I'm going to get lunch, which will not be a salad.
Yeah, no salad.
We'll see you next
definitely
time.
Have the kiss of death.
Kiss of death.
Bye, guys.